so what's next?
Okay, so you did baby face. So what am I doing?
Doing the snake pit.
I watched this morning. This is a heavy, we were going to do a watch-a-thon last night together, but I was like, you know, it was rainy and I was kind of like bummed out yesterday. So I kind of slept through the life.
And I watched it before bed, which is not the best to induce peaceful dreams. No. I had seen it before. We'd both seen it before, but it had been a while. So yeah. We were rewatching it, right? So yes, it is heavy. But again, you know, tell us why.
Yes.
Tell us about it.
It starts and we see, to me, a very pretty Celeste Holmes, because I always thought she looked like an old battle axe with her hair don't, you know, the All About Eve hairdo. Mm-hmm, and when she didn't have her hair like that, you know, she looked so pretty, you know, just like down and not like an owl haircut that she kept till the rest of her life. But this is just me being shallow. Not really, but I just am making a thing about Celeste Holmes because I couldn't believe how pretty she was. Anyway, Celeste Holmes, it opens on a park bench and we see Olivia de Havilland, and she's hearing a man's voice and she's hearing this and she doesn't know. And then all of a sudden, Celeste Holmes is next to her and being kind and saying, you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this. And just hold on to me. And she was going to be getting out soon. She was going, we'll get into that longer, but she was really helping Olivia big time because Olivia was having big time troubles. We find out that Olivia blacked out 5 months. She has been in a mental hospital for 5 months. And we kind of discover how she was married and why all of this happened. But in the meantime, we see the horror of this, like she said, you know, she was an author. She wanted to be a writer. And as she said, they used to take insane people because they thought that sane people would go crazy if they were in a snake pit. And if crazy people were in a snake pit, they would become sane. So that's what she viewed when she saw everybody there, and it was just overcrowded.
That was her shock. That was kind of the moment that shocked her into, because what happens is she's disturbed. She's committed to a mental institution, and this is a state mental hospital. I mean, this was not.
No,
you know,
no, she, boom, boom,
place.
Resting and, place, rest home.
Right. And she, now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, yeah, this state mental hospital was serious business, and she was there. I mean, it's a huge ordeal, you know, that she goes through. It's an incredible ordeal with the shock treatment, the cold ice water baths, the primitive treatments they used, all of this. But my point is, you know, it's that moment, that key moment when they do put her in with all the real hopeless cases, the insane, the raving insane people. And she has that moment of, oh, I'm not like these people. It's a little like Set the Stage for Girl Interrupted, I felt.
Right.
Didn't you? Like, I can rise above this. I can do the work and actually come out of this.
Also,
that moment.
That was a room where people didn't get better after a year. So it was sort of like they were the hopelesses.
Right.
And what came around was there was a woman there who was new, and she was acting violent. And Olivia's character befriended her like Celeste Holmes did to her when she first came in. And the woman was Betsy Blair, who was in Marty, the plain girl.
Right.
The college girl.
Hester.
Yes, Hester. And she was also married to Gene Kelly, and they had a child together, but they divorced. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I said, they were familiar faces. And she really, she fell, like a lot of people do, for her psychiatrist because they become, you know, sort of their hero kind of people. It's like ideation, romantic ideation, which happens very commonly, actually,
mm-hmm.
when you think of them in a romantic way. But
well, also she's with all these women in this female, you know, institution, and he's like one of the few men she gets to see on a regular basis. But he's great, though. Her doctor is great, and that's what saves her, is that, you know, he sees something in her and he feels like he can reach her, and he makes her a special case and gives her the attention.
That nurse was so
mean.
Special
attention in this institution, she would have been in there for life, because they don't make it easy for you to get out.
No. And like they said, like many of these places, they just keep taking people in and they don't have the room for them.
They're overcrowded. Mm-hmm. They don't have the beds. They talked about having to move more mattresses in where there shouldn't be, overcrowding in the hospitals. And this was 1948, and,
right.
and it took place. It was written by a woman who had actually been through it, Mary Jane Ward, who had actually, you know, based on her experiences in a state mental hospital. So that was even before 48. So imagine, you know, what it got like later was unfathomable to go through that.
I can't even imagine. And the mean nurse and what, mm-hmm. you know, there's always people who are not so kind. And I guess it's just because you, I don't know, you get, I like any job, and you kind of get hardened.
Well, being around these people who many of them are raving or are violent, it's got to be very difficult.
I can't, you know, imagine doing that job. Yeah. I can't. I just
no,
can't.
It's just one of the worst things imaginable to go through this. And I thought Olivia de Havilland was amazing. And, you know, this is the first movie set really realistically in a mental institution. I think it was a landmark, and it was opened people's eyes to this. It really was the precursor kind of Sally Field and Sybil, even though that doesn't take place in an institution, but that, you know, I feel like Olivia de Havilland's performance was a precursor to Sally Field and Sybil. And this whole movie was sort of foreshadowing One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, didn't
right.
you think?
And Three Faces of Eve, and all, just mm-hmm. mental illness, especially at that yeah. time, was thought, you know, it was just recently, actually, just in these past maybe decade or two decades, that there was more of an understanding, and not like, oh, they're crazy. You know what I mean? Mental
it was a
illness.
Stigma, and it was yeah. not talked about. And it was not, I mean, if you had a relative who was in the loony bin, they were, you know, erased from history for most people.
Yeah.
You didn't speak about them.
Yeah. Even cancer. They didn't talk about that.
Yeah.
It was such
mm-hmm.
a weird thing. And it's right. not contagious, but, you know, you couldn't do that. And it's very sad. But she came out of it. And she had a wonderful husband, and who helped
yes,
her through
I know.
It.
He was great. Mark Stevens, he's
yes.
another cutie.
Oof.
I wouldn't forget him if I was married to him.
No.
Like she does. She forgets her husband, but she's got blockages. I mean, and again, we should say about this movie, it's really good. Anatole Litvak directed it. It was nominated for Best Picture. She got a Best Actress nomination. Very well done. But, you know, the science doesn't really hold up. I mean, it's dubious, this, you know, the fact that her father died when she was young and she had a fixation. It's all very Freudian.
Very, very much. Very,
for her illness.
Very
yeah.
simple. Very simple.
Yeah.
Kind of, okay, I get it now. I felt the
right.
same way. It was much
but,
more.
But it doesn't really matter, though, because the point is that she goes through hell. It's an internal hell and it's an external hell, because she's in this place, you know, for months and months of her life. She loses memories from
5 months.
She
doesn't even remember.
Yeah. And so, but this is a horrible time. We can all relate to it on that level. She goes through it. It doesn't matter why. She goes through this awful time. She has to endure it. She has to keep forcing herself to try to get better. And she has doctors to help. And she does get better. That's the inspiring part.
Yes, she does get better. And she writes a book.
Yes, she gets better. She wants to be a writer. She has to go through hell, and she gets better and writes a book. It reminds me a little of Jean Tierney, not to get into that, but her real life. She struggles during that same time or a little later, right? In the 50s, she was in the same pit.
I want to do a show on Jean Tierney. I love her.
I want to be on it because I've researched it a lot.
Okay, so why don't we do one in a couple weeks on Jean Tierney? Because I think she is fascinating, and everything she went through. It's just a story. Like, you guys wouldn't believe. She's
amazing. An amazing story.
Yes.
About Jean. I love her.
Me too. She's one of my faves. Okay.
Okay.
Next up is one we debated a little bit about, right?
Yes. But because it's controversial. You know, I decided to do it. We both had reservations about it. But, you know, you can't change history.
No, you can't.
You can't change the fact that the actual historic event happened and the movie happened. And it is one of the greatest movies of all time. And I'm talking, of course, about Gone with the Wind. 1939, everyone knows it. The past several years, it's come under additional scrutiny. It's always been under scrutiny, but particularly the past couple of years in the current atmosphere for its depiction of course, slaves in the Deep South. And they're, even after the war, they're sort of depicted as these willing, obedient servants, you know, which is ludicrous. And there's so much about it that is understandably offensive to African-American lives. You know, it's offensive to all of us, I think, who have a regard for humanity in several respects. But having said that, there's also many good things about it. And I was at a panel discussion last year at the TCM Film Festival, which was great, with Donald Bogle, author of Hollywood Black, and Jacqueline Stewart, who's also a host on TCM now. Molly Haskell, the great Molly Haskell, was there as well. Yes, and I love what Molly Haskell said. I love what Jacqueline Stewart said. I mean, they all had fabulous things to say about the movie. But it was a very frank discussion of, you know, how much does this bother us? And how offensive is it versus how worthwhile is a film and what is inspiring about it? I'm so glad I attended that. And Molly Haskell summed it up really well in the end when she said, you know, yes, the movie makes us all uncomfortable, but when did it become a problem to be made uncomfortable? Why is it wrong to be uncomfortable? You know, that let's talk about why we're uncomfortable about this movie. And that's what this discussion was. So I gained a lot from it. I won't try to do a synopsis of it here, but basically, you know, we all agreed, I think everyone in viewing this and discussing it agreed that it's a great film, and it's cringe inducing depiction of the slaves is unfortunate, but there's much to be gleaned from it as well that's positive. I mean, the main thing is Mammy, the wonderful Hattie McDaniel,
who got a Best Supporting Actress Award.
Absolutely, well deserved.
Black woman, black person, yes. And she couldn't even go to the premiere because it was in Atlanta.
She couldn't attend the premiere in Atlanta, horrifically, which Clark Gable and others fought against, you know, and lost.
She told them to go.
People on her side. Yeah. Yes. She told him to go anyway. He was going to boycott it. There's so many tales. She had to sit in the back, you know, of the ceremony over in the side table. I mean, to get her Oscar, it was ridiculous. But you know, she received it with grace. She earned it because her role as Mammy, she's the backbone of the movie.
She really is.
I mean, it's easy to get caught up in the white people problems, but you know, Mammy is kind of the voice of reason. She's the voice. She also, she doesn't take any crap. I mean, she's not subservient.
Not at all.
She is, but that's not her attitude at all. She's bossing Scarlett around. She's the only one strong enough, really.
Yeah, she raised her.
To stand up to Scarlett.
She raised her.
Yeah. She knows how manipulative she is, and she sees right through it, and she keeps telling Scarlett. She keeps holding Scarlett back from embarrassing herself in front of Ashley, from making a fool of herself, from doing the wrong thing. She's trying to keep her on track. I think it's subversive. I think the movie is actually subversive in that way, because you wouldn't expect this slave to kind of be the most badass, powerful woman in the person in the movie, and a black woman who doesn't take any, you know, crap. She suffers no fools. And again, speaking of Donald Bogle, in his book Hollywood Black, I love what he wrote, that Mammy has a degree of agency that the film cannot explain. And I like the way he puts that, you know, because it's actually probably unlikely that there would have actually been a Mammy, you know, in the Deep South. But the film makes her this powerful character. And I think it redeems itself partially, at least in that regard. But as far as it being inspiring, you know, I mean, what's worse than the devastation of war and having everything you once knew turned upside down? You know, everyone in your family is sick and dies, and there's no food, there's no money. You have to wear the curtains instead of a dress.
That's all right. But the one thing I want to say too, before you keep going, mm-hmm. is that they thought it was going to be over. We'll see you in 2 weeks. We'll see you in two
yeah,
weeks.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
Ah, not 2 weeks.
No, it turned into years. And again, everything was destroyed. And you may say that that's for the best. Of course, you know, slavery was abolished. I mean, all of this, but it wasn't so much. And I think the film makes it clear that they weren't even fighting because they wanted slavery. It wasn't even about that. They felt that they had to fight to defend themselves against their attacker, you know, right or wrong. Anyway,
we're
not
seeing
even to get political about it.
No, but it's just like, it's what's showing what is going on.
Yeah.
In the South, it doesn't have the North take. There isn't Scarlett O'Hara of the North. This is Scarlett O'Hara of the South, who the South
right.
are fighting the North. And it's a horrible
right.
war. And
it's her vision. And she had nothing to do with right. Oh, it's disease. It's people losing limbs. It's the mass slaughter and when they had no anesthetic, no antibiotics. You see all of that. And she has to be on the front lines of it because she's volunteering, like every woman was expected to do, to help the soldiers. And, you know, none of this is her fault. Like, she was born into this society. She's not a man. She has no control. She does the best she can to survive. But none of this is her fault, the war. None of it is any of the women's faults, you know. They have to bear the brunt of it.
And, you know, Scarlett had to grow up because she never had any hardship.
Right.
What's funny is that her mother, Barbara O'Neill, I think she was only like 28 when she played this part. Isn't that fascinating?
Wow, yeah, that's amazing.
But that's just an aside, you guys. Sorry about that.
I love your asides. They
Thank
add
you.
Depth. And insider info. I love it. But no, we could talk about this film for an hour, but I think we should probably not because everybody's seen it.
Yes.
But I think it's important. It would be a great one to watch right now to really remember the depths of despair, poverty, all that. I'm not saying that that's what we're going to go through at all. You know, I can't predict that. Hopefully it will be better than that. But, you know, facing the worst of times.
It's like them saying. Yeah, exactly. Saying.
The resilience of coming through it and doing the best you can, the resourcefulness.
And that's it. Like, you know, people were saying, oh, 2 weeks, whatever, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And we see it's not like that as it keeps going across the country.
It's not realistic, no.
Right.
But we, you know, in a way, we have to tell ourselves that. We can't say, oh, we'll all be locked down for six months.
Exactly. No,
we can't say that.
No,
we have
no.
to say maybe another couple of weeks, the numbers will start dropping. It will get better.
Yes.
I think that's human nature
to
do that.
I do that too. And I, you know, but then every so often you see these, and, you know, I can't, like we were discussing earlier. I mean, if you watch, and my sister, she can't do it. So many people I know. They just can't watch it. I can't watch any news. I haven't been able to watch it at night for years. And really,
no.
The only time I read anything, because I get up so early, is I read it in the morning. And mm-hmm. that's bad enough. But
yeah.
you know, I really
because
have to limit it.
Sometimes you can get, yeah. Well, and sometimes lately you can get addicted to it like a train wreck and just keep watching more news clips and then you will go crazy.
Yeah.
So I've had to cut myself off too from it. We just have to do the best we can with it and keep abreast of it and try to take the measures we have to take until it's over. But Gone with the Wind would be a good one.
Yes, and tomorrow is another day.
To see, yes, to watch during this time. Tomorrow is another day. Even in the end, you know, she can't, Scarlett just keeps getting in her own way. She can't seem to win or get what she really wants, but she's ever the optimist, you know. The sun's going to come out tomorrow, and I'm
right.
going to try again.
Definitely. So we did Gone with the Wind.
And yeah, and then, you know, I think it was a good segue to go into your next one with also the fabulous Hattie McDaniel.
Right. And she's so cute in this. It's called Since You Went Away. And it's based on World War II, but it's not at the war. It's a really good story of the home
front. It's a home front story.
Yes. Of the mother.
Like Gone with the Wind. Similar. Right.
But they're shipped overseas and they're trying to do their best. And also, they don't have the husband's income. They don't have this. So it's Claudette Colbert, who I love. She stars. Her daughters are played by Jennifer Jones and Shirley Temple, who is now a teen. And Hattie McDaniel plays their cook, whatever. But she's also their friend. They love her.
She's their friend. I mean, I have to say that I really wish they would ever have given Hattie McDaniel a movie where she could speak proper English grammar and not have to say, and not have to be degraded with her, you know, inferior English. Yeah. I know that it's a little insulting to see that stereotype, but I like the fact that they she's a member of the family.
Bedelia.
She's a member of the family.
Is that her?
Bedelia.
No. They love her so much. Yes. And because there's no money there, she goes to work at another place. And then she misses them so much, she comes back and says, can I stay here?
Yeah.
And she said, of course. I'll work for my pay. And this is where the friendship comes in. She said, we'd love you to stay here, but you're not working for us. You're a friend. You're staying here. They also know that there is not enough money, so they take in a boarder, who is Monty Woolley, and he is a veteran, I think, of World War I, some big cheeseburger. And he's a pain in the butt to begin with, and she gives him the best room, she and her husband's room, and I think she moves into another room. The girls are, of course, in their room. And the family dog loves Monty Woolley and stays in there.
And he hates this little dog, we should note. He finally grows fond of him in the end, but he's annoyed by the dog, and the dog, of course, loves him.
Yeah, so this is, they're just all shaken up. This is something new. This is something that they didn't know. There's rationing. There's a family friend who comes, who is Joseph Cotton, and he's actually quite charming in this role.
Yes.
He plays...
Well, Joseph Cotton always is.
I love him. I think he's underrated. Uncle Charlie? Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Anyway,
yes.
Shadow of a doubt.
And here he's Uncle Tony. He's not even an uncle, but they just call him Uncle Tony.
Because he's best friends with her husband and her. Mm-hmm. And like all these Uncle Tonys, they say, oh, if only I got you first.
If only I were a heel. And he says at one point, he says, if only I were a first-class synthetic rubber heel, and she said it would be synthetic.
Yeah, she said you'd run so fast if I ever said yes.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. No. He's not going to do anything, but he's in love with her, you know, of course, but nothing ever happens. He's staying there. It's all respectable.
And then Jennifer Jones is grown up. She's like, I think she must be 18, probably just graduated from, and she falls in love with Uncle Tony, but she can call him Tony because now she's 18. And
she has a crush.
She has a crush.
She thinks she's in love.
Right. And then comes Robert Walker, who plays Monty Woolley's grandson. And he thinks he's weak because he wants to be an architect. And he didn't go to a military academy like he wanted him to do. So he's more
of an artist type. And he's not a soldier, even though that's how he was brought up. And I really feel for him.
My heart breaks for him in so many ways in this movie.
Yes.
He and Jennifer Jones were really married during this movie. And they fell in love during this movie. She saw how sweet, whatever. And they got engaged. Well, during the movie, they were actually separating, and she was leaving him for the producer, David O. Selznick, who's producing this film. So just to get through that, that must have been something else. But they were very convincing, as in love. Yeah. And there is tragedy, and the grandfather learns of the tragedy and grows from that. The father is missing, and Agnes Moorehead shows her head.
Agnes again, playing a nasty character yet again.
Yes.
And she is icky.
She just is. She's horrible. And they want to do stuff. So Jane volunteers, who is Jennifer Jones, she volunteers to work at the hospital, the VA, and doing all this stuff with the soldiers and bandaging them. And Agnes Moorehead comes and goes, how can you let Jane do these things and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, she pretty much sees Claudette Colbert as like, amscray, you know, we ain't playing your game no more. And eventually,
well, she's a busy Emily, Agnes Moorehead's character, Emily. She's a busybody and she's superficial and she wants to just go out and have fun and still be a snob and act like the war isn't on.
Right. She wants to be the hostess of the canteens and do the parties and do things like this. And also, she's the type who would, there are rations that she would, you know, get from the black market. She's just like a rotten person. And so Claudette finally says to herself, I'll get a job, because Tony said, why don't you get a job? And she becomes a Rosie the Riveter. She meets a woman who is an immigrant, and they become close friends. Jane
becomes, we have to say, a lady welder, flash dance. What a feeling. I mean, she's got the mask on and the sparks flying and everything. Yeah, man.
But she doesn't have that ripped sweatshirt going on, no. But she is a maniac. Anyway, she does it, and they become... It's Christmas, and they're all together, and, you know, Monty Woolley, Shirley, you know, she plays a great little teen. She does her part. She's not really – she has her part. She likes the general. She sees through his crustiness, whatever. Their friend, Hattie McDaniel, she's there. I love how Tony is a painter. He's an artist, and he takes his picture, and he's going to use it for morale, and he has Claudette Colbert dressed in the woman's uniform, I don't know, whack or something, with her legs showing. She's like lifting
up. Not really dressed because she's like naked from the thighs down, basically, with her garter. Yeah.
And Bedelia's like, oh my. But then he paints a picture of her, and she's like, And
suddenly she loves him. She's carrying his bag for him. She'll do anything for him because he paints this beautiful picture of her, and it is lovely.
It is. It's so cute. I love
that. Those are nice touches. Yeah, that's a nice touch.
And they become Monty Woolley appreciates everything about – he learned – they all grow. They all grow.
They all grow, yep.
In this time, her husband, their father – is reported missing. He's not dead. He's not alive. They don't know what's going on. And yet they keep rising to the challenges that they face. And they change and they become much better people and much kinder, just people that you want to know rather than the people who were spoiled. Yeah. And
right.
Not that they were
bad. I think they were good people. No, they were good people, a good family to begin with, but they were in their own little comfortable bubble, and it was burst. It had to be burst.
And they had a lot of adversity, and they climbed, and they made, because Claudette couldn't imagine herself working, and Tony saying, go to work. And she was, and she did, and she brought her friend, I believe she was from Poland, who was Rosie the Riveter, and she brought her for Christmas. Jane brought home one of the soldiers that she was having a hard time breaking through, and he became a friend. And, you know, it was just this lovely thing where they had all grown. Even, and I guess her name was Bridget, Brig, Shirley.
Mm-hmm. Shirley Temple.
She had a friend who was terrified of people and would never say a word. Even on Christmas, she came in and she said hello. So it was like this big... We've all come a long way, baby.
Yeah, everyone grows. Yeah, the dog grows. Right? Yeah, we all grow.
Our slurpy friend. Yes, and it's a beautiful, touching movie to see. I mean, they're upper middle class easily, and to see the change in them and more empathy. Not that they weren't before, but just the understanding of hardship and what people go through, and they came through it. And it's a very good movie. I would highly recommend it to anyone. It's uplifting.
Yes, it is. It's very heartwarming in the end. It's you know, it's heartbreaking though in scenes. Again, it doesn't shy away from showing you the, I like it because there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of humor in it and a lot of upbeat, you know, smile and taking it on the chin and all and laughing and all of that. But it also doesn't shy away from showing you in the hospital these men who've had their legs amputated.
Or they that people die.
On, that people die, of course, but also, you know, the aftermath of losing your arm, losing a leg. I mean, it's all there. So yeah, it's heartwarming to show that, you know, bringing community together and bringing people together.
And getting rid of your snobby friends and saying, you know, yeah, I've grown away from you.
Friends,
I don't care what you think.
Friends,
yeah.
Who only are interested in themselves and their own self-interests because they have money and they think they're exempt from right. the hardship and the difficulties we're all facing and the worry, then kick them out on their asses. That's what the movie's advising right. me to do. And I think it's good advice.
Amscray, Agnes A.
right.
So I think that leads us into your final movie.
Yes, it does. Another World War II drama, or post-World War II in this case. The other side of Since You Went Away is The Best Years of Our Lives from 1946. Wonderful William Wyler directed this. A classic movie that shows the hardship and it's about the soldiers returning home from World War II, and they've already been through hell. So this is like post-hell hell. This is a whole other level of hell or difficulty, we should say, readjusting to society. You've got Frederick March, who plays Al, the older gentleman, he's still young enough to fight, but he's a little bit older. You've got Fred Derry, Dana Andrews, the wonderful Dana Andrews, who we're fighting over.
Yeah.
Because we both have a crush on the lovely, lovely Dana, understandably so. And then you've got Homer, who has lost his hands in the war, the younger man who has a fiance.
And this is his first acting role as well.
Yes, and he was a real World War II veteran who had lost his hand. He won, you know, interestingly, they were set to give him an honorary Oscar for this part, and he actually legitimately won the Best Supporting Actor Oscar as well, so he walked away with two Oscars. You know, incredible. And his name is, I'm sorry. What is this man's name? It is, I'm looking it up right
Harold
now.
Harold Russell. Russell.
Homer, as Homer Parrish, yes.
Oh, Harold Homer Russell. Harold
as Homer.
Russell. Yeah.
Well, no, Harold Russell is the actor's name. You're right, as Homer.
Oh,
he plays Homer
I thought
Parrish.
You didn't know his right. name, but I remembered Homer, yeah.
Right. Homer, I know. I was blanking on both the names, actually. But, yes, he does an amazing job. They all do an amazing job. It's a brilliantly acted film. You've got Myrna Loy. You've got, as her daughter, Teresa Wright. You know, you've got the fabulous Virginia Mayo in a role
that you love to hate.
Not so likable that you love to hate. She's kind of nasty as well. But anyway, yeah, this is another great movie about the hardships of war, the rationality. The sacrifice, the aftermath of trying to go back to normal, but these men have lost years of their lives. They can't just come back and make it up instantly. You know, Fred faces, I really like Fred's struggle, and I feel like he, you know, these are the scenes that inspire me the most for what we're going through today. We all have to stay at home. We all have to, you know, we can't be going to the grocery store every day or going, we certainly can't go out to eat. We're supposed to be staying at home, rationing our food. At least that's what I'm doing.
Me too.
You know, I bought some supplies. We have to ration them, right? We have to eat our little oatmeal and we have to do our part to keep from spreading this and going out. This was the same. I mean, it was after the war, so the rationing was over pretty much, but he had, you know, they had gone out and spent all of his money. Fred and his little, you know, blonde, cute trick of a wife who wants to go out to the nightclubs every night. And she's getting stockings from the black market and she's furs and she's
and
having
she's,
men buy her things.
She's and, had guys. And the thing is with Marie, she was working prior to Fred coming back. And they had only known each other. It was one of these wartime things, you know.
Right.
She thought he was hot in his uniform. And
which he was.
Yes, of course. But he was cute otherwise. Anyway, I guess, you know, they got married in like 2 days. It was one of those things.
Yeah,
and
they
Fred gets
even
shipped
knew
over.
Each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so they're getting to know each other, and he's realizing kind of what a twerp that he married, and she's realizing how, you know, quote unquote boring he is, because she just wants to go out and show him off in his uniform and spend all of his money. Well, they blow through his money and he can't get a job, and he ends up broke, and they're in their apartment, and she's like, come on, honey, let's go out to the club. And he's like, no, I'm going to make this cream of corn soup out of a can, and I'm going to heat up these canned goods. And you're going to like it. We're going to stay in and eat. And that's kind of the beginning of the end, you know, for them. And they start fighting. And she wants to just go on as if everything's a bed of roses. And he's faced with the harsh reality.
Yeah. And she's
the sacrifice.
Yeah. He has PTSD and he has nightmares.
Yes,
he was a pilot. And he gets really drunk. They all get really drunk the first night they're home because they just don't know what to do. You know, they're just
right.
I don't know how to act. I don't know what to do. Let's get drunk at Butch's. This is where Homer tells them to go because it's Uncle's joint. So they go out all night and they are so drunk. And I love how they have Frederick March is amazing in this. He won the Academy Award for this as well, I believe. He was so good, or he was nominated. I'm not sure which.
Mm-hmm.
He was so good in this. All of them were. Myrna was wonderful because it's uncomfortable. It's like they haven't been together in all these years. And so, you know, they bring Teresa Wright, their daughter, who's now grown, sort of like the in-between to kind of help them come together again so he doesn't feel he feels just so awkward with her, which – how can you blame him? And then Homer.
And then Fred has that great scene with Peggy where he's been drunk and he ends up staying with Frederick March and their family. And he wakes up and he's like,
Peggy.
He grabs her. Yeah, he's still half drunk and half asleep. And he thinks she's some, you know, dame he was probably with overseas or something. And that's really cute. That's a cute scene, though.
Peggy.
And he's being forward, but he doesn't really.
I'm not that it. Peggy. Yeah. And then later,
Peggy, yeah.
He has the dream. He has that horrible nightmare.
Yes. And Peggy has it a couple times, yeah.
And Peggy comes in and comforts him and doesn't wake him up. She just talks to him and gets a cool towel.
Right.
Whereas Marie.
Virginia Mayo. Right. Yeah. Marie is like, you're saying some funny words in Kadorsky. Your sleep. What's that about? Are you? Yeah.
Get over
Are
it.
Are you going crazy?
Get over
it. Is something
she
wrong
says.
With your mind? Yeah. You need to get over it. She's terrible.
She really is, but you love her. Peggy, you're really cute, but you know what? I think you need more makeup. And I'll give you the name of my hairdresser. And then she finally leaves Fred with Steve Cochran, who comes in. And he's one of the guys and says, I don't know why you're having such trouble, pal. Because he was a soda jerk guy, which I find unbelievable. I guess they had trouble casting. Although I love Dana Andrews and I can't see anyone else in the role. They wanted somebody younger.
I think, though, and I see that. But I think it also works in a way because we're meant to understand that, you know, he's grown up in the war. Like, he started out as a kid and now he's a man, you know. I took it to mean that.
And he's also from the wrong side of the tracks, literally. There's a railroad tracks and Dana steps over it. His father and his stepmother are alcoholics, but they love him dearly. And Gladys George, who's fabulous. And I can't think of that guy's name. He's in so many movies. But it's a beautiful, it's real. That's all I can say. I mean, this guy, poor Homer, he has a fiance, but he doesn't want to saddle her with his burden.
Yeah, so he's trying to sort of shun her, and she gets hurt. She wants to take the burden on, so they have to come to an understanding. Everybody has to come to a new understanding of the new normal of what life will be like, you know, what life has been like during the war and still in the aftermath. This is the new normal for them.
Yes.
And it really beautifully portrays these struggles, honestly, in a realistic style and in a heartwarming still.
Yes, and it's relevant. It's relevant.
It is.
Today, as it always will be.
And great movie to watch right now.
It is a beautiful movie, and they all do a great job. That's all I can say. They're wonderful, the whole cast. And watch it. this leads us to our last movie. And this is something she wrote about. First time I talked to Sloan was with your book, tell everybody.
Must See Sci-Fi, 50 Movies That Are Out of This World, another Turner Classic Movies book. That was my first book.
I love it.
And you tell them the movie.
The movie I chose was The Day the Earth Stood Still.
A classic, right?
A classic.
Tell us why it's relevant.
Oh, it's so relevant today. The spaceship lands in Washington, and there's, and out comes some guy who is Michael Rennie, and he...
And what does our government do when this foreigner steps on our soil?
Don't they? They surround him.
They shoot him.
They shoot him, and he goes to the hospital.
Of course. What else would we do, right?
Of course, because he's a man from another world. But he goes to the hospital, but he has his friend, Gork, who is like, I don't know, 7 feet, and he can just, like, I guess, evaporate you. What else would a guy
Pretty
named
much.
Gork do, right? He's like 7 feet, and I'm gonna irradiate you, whatever.
Because he can kill you instantly at will, basically.
But he doesn't want to. He doesn't want to.
No, well, he's been programmed to.
Right.
He's like
to protect.
He's like to protect their planet from violence and people like us, planets like us.
So he lands. He goes into the hospital. There's this big brouhaha, but he leaves and he wears regular clothes. He looks like regular people.
And we're talking about Michael Rennie, Klaatu,
Klaatu,
man who lands from
who's
space. Yes,
fabulous. And he ends up at Aunt Bee's rooming house, Frances Bavier. And she takes him in, and living there is Patricia Neal and her son and other boarders. And Frances Bavier actually has a hubby in this. And he just comes, and he befriends the boy. The boy really likes him. But he is here not for any willy-nilly, skilly thing. He's here for seriousness. The bomb has been dropped in Hiroshima. At Hiroshima, and he is here, not just from his planet, but from other planets, warning us that if we don't stop this crap, we're all going to be destroyed. That's it. Simple message. But people don't get it. So what does he do? He makes the world, not just the United States, not just Russia, not England, not France. He stops the world. All of it. It just stops. Nothing happens, which is
cars can't go.
Nothing.
The
people can't move. No.
I mean, everything just shuts completely down.
And it is something he's trying to show that, yes, I have this power and you have to learn. And it's sort of like today. Everything's shut down pretty much, except for grocery stores and, you know, give props to the people who work there big time. And the truck drivers who bring in the stuff and pharmacies and things like that. But basically, it's not the United States that's shut down, just like Klaatu. It's the world that's shut down. And he's come to give us a warning that if we do not learn to get along, if we do another bomb, if we do whatever, we're going to be destroyed because we'll destroy them and they're not going to let that happen. So he comes.
Well, not only that, but he warns that, you know, not only are we on a path to destroy ourselves as the Earth, but he's like, you can't extend, your violence is extending to other people.
Planets.
You may not know about us,
yes,
but other planets are out here too. And we don't want your violence in this universe, you know. We're going to come blow your ass away. We're going to use
Gork
and our powers to blow you away if you don't stop.
Exactly.
So he means business.
He does mean business, and that's when the world stopped and people start taking it seriously, yet, of course, they want to shoot. And there's that weasel guy who finds out, what's his name? Patricia Neal's boyfriend, who is in All About
Eve.
Hugh Marlowe.
Yes. Hugh Marlowe. He's great also as a weaselly character.
He's always a good weaselly character. And I heard IRL in real life. He was a real, like, you know, he was like a Mr. Groper. He would grope all the women and he would drive them crazy. He groped.
Oh, great. So, no, it's easy to hate him, right?
Yes, groper. Okay, so he's there and he wants to turn him in, and Patricia Neal doesn't want him to be turned in. Klaatu gets very injured and he dies. Gork takes him onto their ship, and he's there. He comes, but that's the whole thing. They just want to shoot. They don't want to listen to the lesson. They don't want to hear. They want to kill him. And
well, they have a way. Gord has a method of, on his planet, science is more advanced. Mm-hmm. So they have a method of sort of bringing him back temporarily. So it's really interesting how that works. But he's basically been killed. Yeah, I mean, twice. Like, or he was shot once and then he was killed. I mean, they keep wanting to attack him and shoot him. And all he is a messenger, you know, telling
all
us
the planets,
what we need to
not
hear.
Just his yes. planet, from all the planets.
Well, it's a message to our entire planet, too. And it's about fighting amongst ourselves, as you said.
Yes. And, you know, right now, it really made me, for me, I mean, just the ugliness in the, it's been ugly. Let's be frank. Books, Dynamic Dames, and 50 sci-fi.
Must-see sci-fi.
Movies.
Yes, great reading material for your quarantine.
It is. And that's what I want to do. I've done movies one. I want to do a book one for everybody as well. So thanks, everybody. And I'll be talking to you soon. And Sloan will be back as well. We'll talk about Jean Tierney. You'll be amazed by her story. So thanks, everybody. Yes. Thank you, Sloan.